Welcome to the latest edition of Actuary Voices, the podcast series from the American Academy of Actuaries. I'm your host, David Nolan, the Director of Communications at the Academy. In this edition, I will be speaking with Annette James, who is chair of the Health Equity Working Group. She discusses why she became an actuary, her work on health equity, and what it means in the context of Black History Month. Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast on your preferred listening platform. And now, on to our conversation. Hello, I'm here today with Annette James, who is chair of the Health Equity Working Group and an actuary of longstanding and with great volunteer work at the Academy. Annette, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a privilege to be here.
Well, it's our privilege to have you. Thank you again for coming along. Tell me a little bit about yourself, your background, where you're from, and how you came to be an actuary.
Oh, okay. So I grew up in Trinidad and Tobago, which is an island in the Caribbean, and I always loved math. At the time, I knew I didn't want to be a teacher, which was probably the first option for someone who loved math. And one of the reasons is that the thought of having someone like me as a student was quite terrifying. I was a good student, got good grades, but I was not challenged. And so I was not very interested in being in school. I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out how to skip school without getting into trouble, which was quite a challenge because in Trinidad, we wore school uniforms. It took quite a bit of ingenuity to get around that issue. I thought briefly about being a doctor, but I had the chance to observe surgery at a really young age, and I almost passed out. So I realized that the future in medicine probably was not optimal. My mom suggested that I might want to become a lawyer because I was talented at arguing, especially with her. However, the thought of defending someone that I believed was guilty was absolutely daunting, let's say. During this time of thinking about what I wanted to do in the future, I met one of my father's friends who was one of the only actuaries. I think he was one of two actuaries in Trinidad at the time. I got an internship with a reinsurance company over the summer during high school. And that friend of my father's was essentially my boss during that internship with the reinsurance company, I realized I loved it. So I decided to study actuarial science.
That's great. I too went through the school uniform background, and I don't miss it at all. your father's friend must have been a real groundbreaker in Trinidad.
He was actually, he was a politician and he was an economist and he was an actuary. He was a mover and a shaker at the time. And he was quite convincing. He saw that I had an aptitude for math and he really encouraged me during the time that of my internship, and he even suggested that I go to the school that I ultimately applied to, which was Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. The main reason I chose Drake University was not for its tropical climate, but for because it was the oldest actuarial science program in the U.S. So I figured they've done this before, that's what I'll do. And yeah, so the rest is history, I suppose.
The Academy is very familiar with the program at Drake University. In 2020, we agreed to sponsor 5 scholarships to its annual conference for minority students, but unfortunately, the event was cancelled due to the pandemic. Tell me, how did you find life at Drake? It must have been quite a shock to the system to move from the sunny Caribbean to the frozen Midwest.
You know, it was a mixed bag. The climate was a challenge. I certainly was not ready for the bitterly cold winter. I actually arrived in January, and let's just say I missed a lot of 8 o'clock classes. But I found that the people there were really warm and inviting. And so I guess that was the trade-off. I decided to stay there because I'd made a commitment, and but I did decide to leave as soon as I could because the weather was just much more extreme than I could ever imagine growing up in the Caribbean. I had been to New York several times and also to Miami several times, but it was always in the summer. And so I had a skewed view of what freezing weather felt like. And so I really struggled with that. I had at least one bout of pneumonia. And so, but I would say that my time at Drake University was amazing, and I truly enjoyed it.
Good to hear. Good to hear. So after Drake, where did you move to? You're out west now, I believe.
Yeah, I am on the. I am in right now. I'm in Reno, Nevada. It's really interesting because I kind of took a tour of the U.S. Before I got here to Reno. After graduation, I moved to Houston to stay with my sister before returning to Trinidad to work off my scholarship. I was on a scholarship to go to Drake University. And but while I was there, I ran out of money because I don't know if I mentioned this. I got done with my program at Drake in 2.5 years. And so the money, I thought the money would continue for the 4 years. Well, it did not. It cut off right then, which I should have figured out. So I ran out of money, and I decided to send out my resumes. I got a job offer with an employee benefits consulting firm in the middle of my first interview. Accepted it on the spot. I was so thrilled to actually get a job. And that's how I started in the actuarial profession.
So what do you find professionally fulfilling about being an actuary?
That is a really good question. So one of the things that attracted me to this profession is that I didn't always know the answer. As someone who was not challenged as a young person growing up, I found the intellectual challenge really fulfilling. I've also discovered, beyond that, I've also discovered over the years that I have a passion for public service. And I figured out that that could take many, many forms. It's kind of interesting because both of my parents were public servants, so maybe I followed in their footsteps. But most notably, I spent 14 years as a regulator for the Nevada Division of Insurance. And my biggest joy, I realized, was giving back. As a regulator, however, I felt like I missed the interaction with other actuaries that I got when I was a consultant actuary. And so the intellectual stimulation I was missing, with actuaries, you know, the joke is you have three actuaries in a room and you get five different opinions. And that's absolutely true. So the intellectual stimulation from hearing different points of views and, of course, debating vigorously with other actuaries is one of the things I miss most. Being in a regulator and being the essentially the only actuary in my office at the time, at least part of the time. And so that was actually one of the reasons that I started volunteering in the profession with both the SOA, the Society of Actuaries, and the Academy, was to find an outlet, find a way to get that intellectual stimulation.
That's a great segue, because I was going to ask you about your role in giving back to the profession as a volunteer at the Academy. You're the chair of the Health Equity Work Group. I wonder if you'd tell us a bit about what led you to that position and what kind of work you're currently involved in and where you'd like that work to go.
Thanks, David. So before we can talk about the work group's charge and what we're doing there, it's really important to have a common understanding of what is meant by health equity. I have personally seen many definitions, and the Health Equity Work Group has adopted a definition of health equity that is, I believe it was initially put forward by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And that definition is really that health equity means that everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. So what this requires is removing the obstacles to health, such as poverty, discrimination, and the consequences of discrimination, including powerlessness and lack of access to good jobs with fair pay, quality education and housing, safe environments and healthcare, and so on. For purposes of measurement, health equity means reducing and ultimately eliminating disparities in health and its determinants that adversely affect excluded or marginalized groups. That's a little bit of a mouthful, but it's important to have a common definition of health equity as we start talking about it. It is such an honor to chair this committee. I think the work that we're charged with is so important. It's a big job, and it's quite terrifying. And it keeps me humble, because I know that there is so much that I have to learn, and I'm on the way. So how did I get involved with this particular chairpersonship of this working group? It was an email from Corey Uccello. She sent me an email. I've known her for several years, working in different volunteer capacities with the Academy. And just being a speaker at a lot of different events and so on. I've known Corey for quite a while. So she sent me an email and said, you know what, we're starting this this work group on health equity. Are you interested? And so I said, I think I am. I'm not sure what this means, but let's chat about it. And we'll see. And she was just very compelling, the way she explained what health equity was and what we were trying to accomplish with this work group. Let's just say I could not say no. You know, It is very, very much of a humbling experience, because while I have had some less than optimal experiences as a Black person and as an actuary, there was so much that I didn't know. I've had less than optimal experiences navigating the healthcare system. There's so much that I did not know, and even more that I did not recognize in hindsight, that was very much part of what we were going to be addressing in this work group. So first of all, let me start and tell you what this work group is trying to do. So the charge of the work group is really to, from an actuarial point of view, to address health equity. And so it's a three-pronged approach. First, to evaluate actuarial practices in the context of health equity. So this is the introspective phase. What is actuaries, what sorts of methodologies and processes and data sources and so on do actuaries use that may contribute or perpetuate health disparities, and then figuring out how to assess the impact of those disparities. And the second prong is to educate actuaries and other stakeholders on health equity issues. And thirdly, apply a health equity lens when considering the impact of any health policies. So that's a pretty big ask for a work group. And it's my understanding that we've never really taken an approach like this to any of the work with the Academy, looking internally to see if there's anything that we could do better as a profession. Are we actually causing harm in the procedures and practices that we've been taught? That takes quite a bit of introspection, and I would say several people have told me courage. So that's what that's what we're trying to do. We're working on the first prong, identifying the areas in which actuaries may be contributing, actuarial practice may be contributing to health inequity. And we're finding it a bit challenging. We're finding challenge keeping the conversation to what we as actuaries can impact, because as you can imagine, health equity is a large area, and there are many aspects of health equity that actuaries really cannot impact. And there are a lot of health policy experts working on that. So keeping the conversation to what we can impact has been a challenge, and also getting everyone on the same page has been a challenge. Just for myself, educating myself on exactly what health inequity looks like and some of the contributing factors, and just understanding that from a deep level it's been an education for me. And so I can't wait until we get to a point where we can start educating others, because I understand coming from a position of not understanding health equity in the context of actuarial practice.
Yes, I agree. It is courageous work, and I do want to thank you for taking it on. It's also a massive area of work. We're speaking at the beginning of Black History Month in early February, and that makes, I think, our conversation and the work you're doing even more poignant and topical. As you say, as a Black actuary, you may have come across certain situations that you found uncomfortable or even wrong. Do you care to share anything, or would you prefer to look towards the future?
I would prefer to look towards the future. I do think though that there may be some something instructive in maybe giving an example or two of some of the situations that I've come across. Were you considering mainly in the health sphere or as an actuary?
Well, Annette, I'm happy to listen to any stories that you're willing to share with us. Perhaps something from your experience as an actuary would resonate with our audience.
Sure. So one of my first memories of suboptimal experiences in the actuarial sphere was going to an actuarial examination site and being told that I was in the wrong place. The gentleman was very friendly and he did not even ask me if I was here to take an examination. He just assumed that I was not. And I did not even, I just assumed that he was right. I don't know why. And it took me like 20 minutes to run around trying to figure out where I should be and then come back into the examination room 5 minutes late. And So that was a suboptimal experience. Because, you know, there was probably a case of unconscious bias and just assuming that I was in the wrong place and could not possibly be taking an actuarial exam. One of the one other example I would give relating to employment is one of my former employers, I was passed up for a promotion and I start asking why, thinking that I would, you know, I'd want to improve myself and figure out why, what I was doing wrong. And so one of the gentlemen that I consider to be a mentor finally called me into his office and he said he needed to answer my question. And he said that the decision to give the promotion to someone else was his. And this is a gentleman that I considered a mentor. And the reason he made that decision was to protect me because he said it was not in my best interest to get the promotion because this city was not yet ready for a Black consultant. I thanked him. I really did because without him letting me know, I would not have understood kind of what the situation was. So those are two examples of situations that have been less than optimal, but it has taught me resiliency and that really just because someone thinks something that doesn't make it so. And yeah, just to keep plugging on and be who you are, be your authentic self, and good things will happen.
Your first story reminds me of a tale I heard a while back. It was by Isabel Wilkerson, the author of The Warmth of Other Suns and Cast, who at the time was working at the New York Times. She arrived for an interview late one day with a prominent businessman in Chicago who refused to meet with her because he couldn't believe that the Black woman standing in front of him, saying she was from the New York Times, was actually from the New York Times. Let's return a little bit to your work with a health equity working group and talk to the future. You mentioned that you want to educate actuaries about possible unconscious or bias in the data sets they're using. And obviously that would be a very concrete outcome. Have you discussed other concrete outcomes that you'd like to see?
Yeah, so thanks for asking that question. So what we're finding is that there are a couple of issues that have bubbled up to the top as we start looking at actuarial practice. One of those you've already identified is in data. So the use of historical data that may have biases embedded in it, use of that historical data to project into the future, does that in of itself perpetuate disparities and have perpetuate disparities in health outcome and have unintended consequences? We've also started to wrestle with the use of certain cost-based algorithms and care management and so on, where the results are skewed and result in disproportionately fewer resources allocated to people of color when we're looking at care management programs. And the reason is that in these circumstances, in the algorithm, cost is used as a proxy for need. And what we're finding is that is not a really good, there's not always a good correlation between cost and need, particularly in underrepresented communities. So that's definitely an area that we're looking at. One of the bigger questions that is really, I'm still marinating it in my brain. One of the bigger questions that I'm wrestling with and our group is wrestling with is the question as to whether inequity really is a quantifiable risk. And if so, if it is a quantifiable risk, how do we approach the measurement of that risk? How do we study it? And so that we can use the quantification of that risk to maybe adjust data and adjust our results, so to remove the bias or at least mitigate it. So as I say, I don't have any answers on that yet, and I'm just going to let it marinate for a while and see where it goes. As far as our work with the health equity, as I said before, we're really right in the beginning stages. So we are looking at, the introspective part of our charge and just trying to figure out what the issues are. And I hope that, as we look to the future, we can use what we've learned in the process of examining health equity, use what we've learned and pass it on to other actuarial areas, so maybe it can be used as a blueprint to do similar type of investigation. There are some areas that I've already thought about. Once you start thinking of equity, start thinking of equity in other areas, for example, Social Security, and the funding crisis of Social Security is a big issue. And the typical actuarial solution is to increase the Social Security normal retirement age. And, one of the things that has been marinating in my brain, there's a lot of stuff marinating in there, is whether it makes sense to approach the raising of the Social Security normal retirement age from an equity perspective, using an equity lens. So what that may mean is having different normal retirement ages based on income or maybe industry or some other metric that would be more equitable and would have outcomes that do not disadvantage certain communities. It's well documented that people of color have lower life expectancy, so raising the normal retirement age uniformly is likely to exacerbate that inequity. So I have lots of thoughts around that, but I think you want me to focus back on health equity, and there certainly is a lot that we can do in the area of health equity. The current administration is focusing on health equity and the many different aspects of it. So what we're doing with the health equity work group is very current and very relevant to the time.
Absolutely. I must say your brain must be an exciting place to be. You do have a lot going on there.
A lot of marination going on.
Excellent. Lovely. Love to hear it. Tell me, as I said, it is Black History Month, and what does that mean for you, both either professionally or personally?
To me, Black History Month is about celebrating the integrity, leadership, determination, and resilience of people who were able to make a difference and a contribution in spite of the obstacles that they face. So these are important lessons that anyone could learn from. And this year, Black History Month takes on particular meaning given the events of last year, which highlighted lingering social justice issues. And with respect to health equity, the COVID-19 pandemic has revealed longstanding disparities in health outcomes experienced by communities of color, including the Latino, Native American, and the Black communities. So this year, Black History Month is probably more poignant and more significant than in the past.
Well, let's hope we're, by doing this podcast, we're doing a little bit to highlight the achievements of prominent Black people in the United States. I'm going to switch it up a bit and ask you, if you have any time left in your life, what do you do for fun?
That's a good question. Again, as maybe you can't tell, but I love to laugh. So any opportunity I can get to laugh is one that I take. But seriously, I love to read. I could get lost in in so many books. I'm sometimes reading four or five books at a time. And please don't ask me what I'm reading now, because I probably can't pull it out. Too much pressure. But I love to read. I love to cook. I'm also fascinated with photography, because it is it seems like you just point and shoot, but there's so much more to photography, and it's something that I'm really horrible at. I'm trying to get better, and I've been working on this for at least 10 years. And I'm still not very good at it. But yes, those are the things that I like to do with my time. And of course, spend time with family.
Right. Yes. Your laugh is very infectious, it must be said. I too like to read, and I've taken up a lot more of audiobooks. I used to just do them on road trips, but now I'm doing them as I walk around trying to keep exercising. Maybe towards the end, we're getting towards the end now, and I was just wondering, what challenges do you see for the actuarial profession in the future? We've obviously discussed some of them around health equity, and you could revisit some of those or perhaps introduce some new ones.
Yeah, I think health equity is the challenge of the moment, isn't it? I think, and that's something that I hope we can get our arms around, since there's such a national focus on it. And I think that, you know, I really give kudos to the Academy for putting such a spotlight on health equity and allowing actuaries to join the national conversation. And that said, I see a lot of challenge as far as innovation and the use of, we kind of touched on it a little bit, the use of big data and to project the future and where I see a big challenge is the prudent use of that data and the use of algorithms, and how do we do that in a way that is not just prudent but responsible, so that we we don't make bigger issues. We don't make bigger issues. One of the things that I about a year ago, I wrote an article for The Actuary about the responsibility of the actuarial profession in the future of insurance, and looking at some of the insurtech sort of startups and so on, and how do we approach that in a responsible way with responsible regulation, without being too onerous so that we stifle the creativity. I think balancing creativity with responsibility, I think, is probably something that we need to pay attention to.
No, absolutely. They sound like serious challenges. But if they marinate in your brain a little bit, I'm sure we'll be to dealing with them in a responsible way. Is there anything you'd like to share to end our conversation with our audience?
You know what, this has been thank you so much for having me and giving me a few minutes to chat here. I hope that anything that I have said would, inspire maybe a young person thinking about being an actuary. And it's perhaps a long and daunting kind of endeavor, but it's also the most rewarding profession in so many ways, that anyone who has the aptitude and the determination and the perseverance, you can do this and you can make a difference.
You're absolutely right. Seeing people like you in a position that you didn't think you could achieve is certainly a helpful leg up when you're thinking about your future as a young person. And it's something the Academy tried to do in promoting diversity in the profession when we sponsored a Magic School Bus book, where Aunt Maxine, who was one of the lead characters, was a black woman, a black actuary, who was on one of the famous trips that the Magic School Bus goes on. I don't know if you're familiar with that book, but it is selling like hotcakes.
Yes, I heard about it and I've been meaning to pick one up. Right. So
I'll send you the link right after we finish. Annette.
Sounds good.
Annette, thank you so much for joining us today. I very much appreciate it. Your work is very important and very valued by all of us here at the Academy. And I'm honored to have spent a little time talking to you about it.
Thank you, David. This has been my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Actuary Voices, the podcast series from the American Academy of Actuaries. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your preferred listening platform.